ladies and gentlemen. This is Tim Benal of BenalofAmerica.com, and I want to welcome you to the debut of Benal of America Audio. When I journeyed down to Washington, D.C. for X Conference 2, it was the culmination of a 9-month project to bring the miracle of sound to BenalofAmerica.com. And not just sound, but the voices of the great minds of Esoterica. And not just those voices, but a full-on meeting of the minds between myself and these said geniuses. This is about taking BenalofAmerica.com's unique, off-kilter observations to a whole new level. Now, somehow, some way, I know there's someone out there who's listening to this that has no clue about the world of Esoterica. For those few sad people, Esoterica is what most commonly called by its more commodified name, the paranormal. We at BenalofAmerica.com call it Esoterica. And, of course, it's no coincidence that the very first guest at Benal of America Audio is none other than Stanton Friedman, the father of modern-day ufology. He has always been held in the highest regard by us, and therefore, it was only fitting that he would be the foundation for our new venture. I personally grew up watching Stanton Friedman on every UFO special I saw, so there's no one else I would want as the inaugural interview. Now, for those of you cretins out there who know nothing of ufology, I will give you a brief biographical sketch of Stanton Friedman. He has a B.S. and M.S. in physics from the University of Chicago. He has spent 14 years working on classified nuclear propulsion projects. He is the original civilian investigator of the Roswell crash, and in the mid-1990s, he broke new ground with his work on the Majestic 12 documents. He's the author of Top Secret Magic and Crashing Corona. He's given countless lectures and written dozens of papers related to UFOs. And that's all from his bio. What it doesn't say there is that he's also one of the most respected elder statesmen of ufology, and he's one of the best spokesmen for the field. He's one of the most realistic and scientific of the many investigators in ufology, and I can also personally tell you he's one of the wittiest folks in ufology. As someone who prides himself on his realism, I knew Stanton Friedman was the only choice for the very first Benal of America Audio. So enough of my yakking. Let's boogie. This interview was conducted on April 23rd, 2005. My friends, Benal interviews Stanton Friedman at X Conference 2.
Here's Stanton Friedman, father of modern-day ufology, BenalofAmerica.com. Welcome, Stan. I don't know, I just kind of want to rip with you. First of all, I don't know, you've been doing this for how long?
I gave my first lecture in 1967, so that's 38 years, and I got interested in 1958. Which is 47 years, so, yeah, I've been at it a long time.
All right, I guess what I really want to know is, you've been doing this for almost half a century, right? So, you must be frustrating. You get frustrated with the field and the lack of, you know, do you know where I'm going with this?
Well, I try to avoid being frustrated. You're only frustrated if you have unreasonable expectations. I've given over 700 lectures. I essentially always get a good response. I am pleased that I can stimulate people's minds. The question and answers always go on. I like talking to people. I do lots of radio and television programs. Rarely do I get the same kind of terrible experience I had with Peter Jennings, for example. I mean, that was frustrating. It made me angry, frankly. Have him treat Roswell the way he did. It was not just me, but things like interviewing Jesse Marcel Jr. and not bothering to mention that he's a medical doctor and a colonel in the reserve and serving right now in Iraq. That goes to credibility pretty powerfully if you say a medical doctor, practicing physician now. But with that as an occasional exception, I feel that I've made progress. I've talked to a few hundred thousand people directly, reached tens of millions more via the television shows. I remember I instigated the Unsolved Mysteries program on Roswell. It was seen by 28 million people the first time around. That's a good feeling. And I got access to some of the dozens of people who wrote the program because I had instigated, so that was a good feeling. I haven't lost hope. I'm still an optimist. I'm still enthusiastic. Yes, I do get fed up with the people in ufology who don't do a good job, which does happen too. And I'm known for exposing frauds. People get mad at me, you know, Bob Lazar and others like that. But I learned a long time ago that somebody seeming sincere doesn't mean they're telling the truth. So to have the chance to influence three generations of people is kind of a privilege.
Awesome. All right. And over the course of the time that you've been in the field, have you ever felt like there's going to be a breakthrough soon? Or is it always, you know, day now?
You know, for more than 30 years, there have been rumors about the government's going to release it all next year or 2 years from now. And every so often that rumor goes out and then nothing happens. I remember when Jimmy Carter was president, Washington Whispers and U.S. News and World Report, a very respectable place certainly, ran a comment to the effect that the government was going to release all its data. And sometimes I wonder whether these aren't stories planted by the nasty, noisy negativist to get people's hopes up so that then other people can say, see, that was baloney. This morning, as a matter of fact, talking to somebody, I pointed out that if good stuff gets out, like the original MJ-12 documents, you'd certainly expect the intelligence agencies to put out garbage, which would be shown to be garbage, and then guilt by association. Well, this MJ-12 documents are fraud, so that one must be. I mean, that's standard practice in the intelligence community. And I have to believe that these guys aren't idiots. And I also have to believe that clearly there's a rule from on high that thou shalt not divulge. So I worked under security for 14 years. I don't expect people to release data casually. And it's one of the things, you know, there's this recent story about Dan Burrish. And the notion that he is now an emeritus member of the MJ-12 team and his oath of secrecy has been withdrawn, that makes no sense to me at all. When you leave a place where you've worked in classified work, you normally sign papers that say you will forever keep your mouth shut. And they don't tell you if stuff's been declassified. You may find that out. It happened with some of my papers. So that doesn't strike me as real. But what I find is most people aren't familiar with how security works. There are a lot of myths out there, and I spend a lot of my time destroying the myths. For example, that, all classified stuff is destroyed is declassified after 20 years or 25 years or 30 years. That simply isn't true. But you find out that it isn't true by, for example, asking the Eisenhower Library, as I did a year and a half ago, how many classified pages do you still have? The guy thought for a moment. He says, about 300,000. Eisenhower went out of office in January of 1961. Now, I asked the people at the Truman Library, and it took them a while. I had to call them back and stuff, but still 45,000 pages from that era that's classified. And not everything gets to the presidential library. As a matter of fact, it was kind of interesting. Once a visit to the Eisenhower Library, I found stuff that should have been at the Truman Library. And I asked about that. I mean, this is Truman-era stuff. He said, yeah, but a lot of stuff gets left at the White House when you transition. So when it finally does leave there, it goes to whoever's in office at the time, not who originated it. So I spent a lot of my time trying to educate people. And one of the challenges is to make up for the nonsense that the ancient academics and fossilized physicists and SETI cultists put out about you can't get here from there. These are guys who don't know anything about flying saucers and don't know anything about advanced propulsion systems. And so, you know, you have to correct them. Even though they've got a PhD after their name, that doesn't mean that they know anything at all about this area. And it's the arrogance. And maybe it's because I don't have a PhD. You know, I tell people, BS, everybody knows what that is. MS is more of the same, and PhD is filed higher and deeper. And, you know, I can't complain about these guys if I had one. But you wonder, here's an area I happen to know a great deal about, both flying saucers and far-out technology, because I worked on it professionally. How many other things do we hear about in the media or from these ancient academics where they're equally ignorant and making as if they know something when in fact they know nothing? So that is of concern to me. And the one thing, you know, you talk about discouraging or frustrating, I'm discouraged in the world in which we live in some ways, because I thought when I was a heck of a lot younger that the world for my kids and my grandson would be a heck of a lot better than the world that I grew up in. I grew up during World War II, and things were a mess. The Cold War, nuclear annihilation, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I look around the world, and I don't see that things are any better now than then. As a matter of fact, in some ways worse. That scares me. Nuclear proliferation, a major concern of mine, because I know what nuclear weapons can do. When I see every Tom, Dick, and Harry may be able to buy fissionable material from guys who were guarding it in the Soviet Union who aren't getting paid enough, that's scary. If you got to spend $2 billion to build a facility to make it, that's one thing. A little easier to spot. But if some guy's smuggling it because his family is starving, that's quite another matter. You know, that scares me. The fact that that nationalism is as strong as it ever was, that bothers me. I want people to think of themselves as earthlings. And I'm a dual citizen of the United States and Canada, have been since 1993 when I became a Canadian after the law was changed so I wouldn't lose my American citizenship. And I am dismayed by how the world looks at the United States, not just on UFOs, but all other things. I've been ashamed to be an American on occasion recently. And I find that scary. Is it just me, but I seem to find a lot of other people who think the same way. And we don't need a bully on this planet. We need to respect other cultures instead of this attitude, if it's American, it's the finest in the world. I mean, if we say it often enough, that doesn't mean it's true. And I look around at the world, and I realize that we have given the rest of the world cause to be concerned about American domination. And that is a worry to me, and it fits in with UFOs only in the sense that I want people to think of themselves as earthlings rather than these nationalistic labels. But the whole American approach has been the nationalistic label. We're the United States, number one, number one. And I know from my travels, I travel on my Canadian passport when I go overseas, because nobody talks about ugly Canadians. And when it comes to UFOs, many people think that the garbage side is what typifies America, the people who get the publicity. And the media certainly doesn't treat it properly. I mean, we like to think the New York Times, Washington Post, beacons of democratic press activities. When I see how they cover UFOs, which is rotten, when I see the arrogance, you know, if this was important, we would know about it, and we don't, so it must not be. And anybody who says it is some kind of a nut, which seems to be the general attitude. I find that very distressing because I think it applies in other areas. And American education, for example. When you live outside the borders, you get some different views about how good it is. So on the UFO scene, I am pleased at the response I get. I've been back to some colleges 5 times. I get an awful lot of people. Well, as an illustration of that, I was on Coast to Coast Radio, big audience. And I offered a free list of books and papers and videos and stuff. Send a self-addressed stamp, number 10 envelope, to Post Office, Stan Friedman, Post Office Box 958, Fulton, Maine, 04730-0958. I got 1,000 requests, all but 5 with the envelope, thank goodness. What was intriguing to me was that I got over 200 post-it notes with little comments. Keep up the good work, or I've been following your work for 40 years, or 30 years, or 20 years, and I'm so glad somebody's doing what you're doing, and always pleased to hear you on Coast to Coast. I don't trust everybody on there, but you, I do trust. You know, it's a hidden constituency, if you will. And so that gives me feedback. Somebody's listening. You know, that's the thing about radio. You don't get feedback if you're not on a live program, you know. And even when it's live, you know that only a small fraction of the people who call in get on the air, and you don't know how representative they are. So I feel that I've served a useful function, in other words, in trying to make people aware that there are respectable, responsible people with a sense of humor who can provide facts and data and solid information. They don't need to depend on the noisy negativists or the tabloids, the charismatic hand wavers. There is data. And if 1,000 people were willing to waste 2 stamps and address 2 envelopes, I mean, if I had said just send a postcard or something, I'd have had 10,000, you know. But they had to take a little trouble, and that's a good sign that they're willing to do that. So I'm still enthusiastic. I'm still optimistic. I still haven't spent overnight in the hospital, and I'm 70 years old, so I think I'm going to go on for a while. I mean, I might get hit by a truck tomorrow. You know, who knows? But, what I mean is I have not really turned off. And I'm looking forward. There's going to be, I just did a new chapter to add on to Top Secret Magic in my book about MJ-12 stuff.
Yeah, I read it. It's great.
And that'll be out in September. And I have an outline for a new book, Flying Saucers and Science. And I haven't really been working hard on it, but something good may come out of the fact. Crazy thing happened. I got a call to provide a 500-word article. They are already here for a booklet that's going to be distributed when War of the Worlds is shown, the new production, Steve Spielberg and Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
I think it's the end of June.
Summer, yeah.
And they're going to publish 2 million copies of a little booklet. A lot of advertising and stuff. But they're going to include my article. They came to me, which was nice. And they insisted I put more humor than was in my first version. Mainly a young audience, one expects. But I have mentioned my website on there. And 2 million people, that's a lot of free advertising. You know. So just the fact that they wanted that article, that they came to me as scientists instead of a lot of other people they could have gone to. That makes me optimistic. I'm not a science fiction guy. I read it when I was 12, you know, and I opted more for real people and real science. But I feel that reaching the young people in the world, which it certainly will, is a good place to start.
Now, you've seen the field, you've been in the field for a long time. How would you describe the evolution of the field? It seems like I've heard you say before that we're not really interested in lights in the sky anymore, and I get the sense that the field's evolved into a disclosure-oriented field. That seems to be the buzzword of the now, at least, the last 5 to 10 years. And so you've been in the field, you've seen the evolution of the field firsthand, so what do you think of that?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not particularly impressed by either the disclosure, Steve Gerr's disclosure outfit, and exopolitics, frankly, bothers me, even though that's the theme of this conference, because there's too much proclamation without substantiation, which is not something I approve of. I read one of the recent, brand new books on exopolitics, and there were so many proclamations in there that I can't handle that kind of thing. You say that we're being run by the same outfit that runs the universe and the galaxy and the neighborhood. I'd like to see some evidence of that, please. You know. So the field has evolved. Now, one thing that's changed is there's certainly a lot more interest in documentation. And there is a need for more younger people. And I even did a MUFON Journal column about we need new blood, that some of us are getting old, and I'm not the oldest of the gang. But it's good to see people like John Greenwald is here with his new website. I mean, it's not new, but his huge website, Black Vault. And he spent time over at the archives the other day, and I'll be over there with him on Monday and Tuesday. That's encouraging. Nick Redfern, fairly young as these things go anyway. So I'm glad to see that. I'm glad to see that people, because of the Internet, it does have some good things about it. And because of government agencies posting stuff on the Internet, it makes access to a lot of information a lot easier than it used to be. And I had somebody, and I gave, in a sense, a wrong answer. A guy called me, wanted to know how important the Internet was and all the research that I'd done. I said, well, you know, it's nice to be able to email people and get instant responses, and it's nice to find out who won a Nobel Prize in Physics in 1957 without leaving my desk. On the other hand, I said, all my discoveries about Donald Menzel and other people, stuff relating to MJ-12, I said, you couldn't get that on the Internet. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, it hasn't been scanned. You got to go there. And you got to look, you know, you ask for the boxes, and you look in the boxes, and there'll be a withdrawal sheet, and you got to ask for that, and 2 years later you get it. And, you know, so the Internet really played no part. Well, now, gradually, some of that stuff is being put on. And the CIA, of all people, has just established a new room at the archives where you can book an amount of time to check their files. Keyword sort on the computer. Now, boy, from all the time that I spent in archives, and I see an evolution happening here that reminds me of when I used to do library research, for example. My son is a hemophiliac, finding out the latest publication. You go to the abstract journals, and you copy down the numbers, and then you go to try to find the journal and get the article and stuff like that. And now with Medlines, you can do an instant search sitting at your desk, hit all the world's journals with a few key clicks, and you can get a list of all the papers that have been published in the last 2 months about the topic of interest and how many deal with this and that, and then how many deal with both together, you know, and stuff like that. Boy, does that make searching easier. And so if that happens with regard to some of the historical stuff, that would be a real boon. And let's face it, who's better with the computers than the young people, not us old guys? And so I'm looking forward to that as perhaps providing insight. And there's another part of that. The declassification work these days is being done by people other than those who classified the work originally 50 years ago, the period time frame I'm interested in. And so they might make mistakes, and they might not realize why this particular information would be classified when coupled with something else. And sure, it's all historical, but it can be very frustrating when you find a reference to a document that's still classified. A secret Tom Jones, Paul Smith, I'll make up the names, January 2nd, 1953, and that's all you know, 2 pages. Okay, you put in a request, mandatory classification review, and 2 years later, they notify you that they've approved your request, and here's a copy of the document. And you find out that it was what you were hoping it would be. those are great moments. But I think that there will be a young generation of people like John Greenwald who are able to really use the files and use the computer, and I hope they will couple it with an understanding of history. That's one thing I know a lot of people don't seem to know a lot about, history. And I don't claim to be a historian, but because you spend time at presidential libraries, and I've been to 20 archives, you get a handle when you handle material that they have signed personally, you know, and you get a feeling for a lot of stuff that's miscellany to the fourth degree, but still gives you a perspective, a context for the information you get. And so I'm optimistic about that getting better rather than worse. And so maybe by the time I go off this mortal coil, shuffle off this mortal coil, we will have a lot more that's available. And I'm hoping that a younger generation of journalists, as opposed to ufologists, will be willing to dig into the cosmic Watergate. I mean, it took a lot of work to do the Woodward-Bernstein Act on the political Watergate. The Post had 16 guys working full-time on that at one point. Now, if we could get some of these young journalists to look at UFOs this way and blow the lid off the cosmic Watergate, then we will have accomplished a great deal. So that's one of the reasons I keep going strong. Maybe we can get some of these young journalists to get off their duff and find out what's really going on.
All right. I'll wrap it up with a lighthearted question. You're an old school baseball fan. That's what you told me yesterday.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this steroid flap? Because we'll move away from ufology, and it's something that probably people don't get a chance to hear from you, and that's a sports-related question, but that's what I'm interested in hearing your opinion of. So what do you think of the steroid controversy in baseball?
I'm frankly rather disheartened. Growing up as a kid in New Jersey, where you had 3 major league teams within earshot, so to speak, you were either a Dodger, Giant, or Yankee fan. I was a Dodger fan, and I was really inspired by, for example, Jackie Robinson. The guy's guts, his daring, his challenging of pitchers, all the rest of it. It was all based on native ability and then some. He had an overabundance, if you will. And frankly, it gave me hope as a young Jewish kid. If a black guy can put up with what he had to put up with that first couple of years and still succeed so well and be so exciting, then there's hope for the rest of us. But I grew up respecting native talent, and the chemical enhancement of capabilities bothers me, frankly. I don't much approve of that. I think that that's what makes sports exciting, is A, that you can aspire to do what your heroes do. And of course, one thing that was different then, the same guys played for a team for a long time, so you could develop loyalties, which was important. And there were human relations things that were important. They weren't getting paid these horribly large salaries, which I think is nuts. When a Southerner, Pee Wee Reese, can play shortstop to Jackie's second base, that's an inspiration, too, that people can overcome their innate prejudices and so forth. Now, if you throw chemistry into the act, that fouls up everything. And I'm sure that some people are more enhanced than others, and the beneficial effects are greater with some people than with others. But I love to watch baseball. I used to take my kids. When the Dodgers moved to California, I moved out there, too, not because of them. But you take the kids to Dodger Stadium. It didn't cost me an arm and a leg, and it was fun. It was good. And when I look at some of these guys now who don't realize they've got fans looking up to them, and young fans especially, and where it's who can make the most money and take the most pills, so to speak, at some risk to their own bodies, incidentally, which is another bad thing. Sports is tough enough as it is, you know, without throwing in the pain from the chemicals at a later date. I'm dismayed. I'm not in approval of enhancement. And I think that baseball has let this go on for much too long. It hasn't done the disciplining that needs to be done. And, you know, we, living in Canada, when Ben Johnson won the 100 meters at the Olympics and then lost it, it was a horrible disappointment to an awful lot of people. And, you know, the guy worked awfully hard. He was a good runner. It's a shame he had to go that extra step to be the best. And so, in ufology, we have people who talk much bigger than they should. It's like they've chemically enhanced their presentations. And I don't much approve of that either. So I'm fairly consistent. I like loyalty, I like talent, I like people who work their butts off to get where they are. And I suppose it's a throwback. I worked my way through college. I had scholarships, but I worked as a busboy in the Catskills two summers. I waited table. I was a union waiter in Chicago for 3 years at a good restaurant in the south side of Chicago. I earned my way, in other words. And I tend to look upon that as the way things should be. Yeah, it's nice if you got a rich uncle. But, you know, Hughes Aircraft once did a study of their engineers and found the higher the percentage of their college expenses they had made themselves, the more they were making now, which I thought was an interesting correlation, you know. So you leave the chemicals to the chemists, as far as I'm concerned, and take them away from the athletes.
All right, well, you want to throw a plug in for your website or for your books and stuff, too?
Yeah, my website is easy, www.stantonfriedman.com. That's F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. My email address is F-S-P-H-Y-S, that stands for Flying Saucer Physicist, @rogers.com. I'm easy to reach. I'm in the phone book in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, even though my post office box is box 958, Houlton, H-O-U-L-T-O-N, Maine, M-E, 04730-0958. And if there's anybody out there, I'm particularly looking right now for guys who know about airplane intercepts of UFOs where the pilots didn't come back, the planes didn't make it back. I think there were a lot of these. We haven't been told about any of them. I think that may be the next big exposure on the UFO scene.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.